You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
All I'm saying is, I think, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine can go fuck himself. All of his train friends, I don't like him.
He got shifty eyes, my man.
He got shifty. He's fucking creepy, and I don't appreciate it, because you know what he's doing nowadays? He's fucking up my evening and morning commute. I live in an area that has many trains, many train tracks, many railroads. I think that's the common term that we use today. And it's just like, there's a ton of construction right now, and it took me like an hour just to get home from, you know, back from where I work to my apartment, and I can get there like in 2 minutes. You know, typically it's like I'm less than a mile, but it took me a fucking almost an hour to get back home.
Wait, for real?
Yeah, that's why I was texting you before that, and I'm just thinking, fucking trains.
I love how you said there's a little construction going on right now, as if there hasn't been construction going on like I-35 for five years.
Oh, it's been going on forever.
My favorite tweet that I've seen in recent memory was, y'all tripping like Trump going to build a wall when we haven't fixed I-35 since 1980.
He's going to make I-35 great again.
I hope.
Yeah. Like, that's one thing you can
I'd get down with the platform if that's what he was going to fix.
Expand it, knock down all the H trees, right? So get rid of all the trees on the side of the road. Just, you know, make it a 16 by whatever fucking, I don't know. I don't understand road nonsense.
I just hate construction.
I do too. It does suck. But we're not here to talk about that anymore. I've vented with my hatred of trains and Thomas the Tank Engine, that really creepy
He's
character.
Really got shifty ass.
Reverend Wilbert Audrey, who I'm now looking up on Wikipedia. Fuck you, sir. You create a monster. But yes, welcome everyone to We Are Era, OneOfUs.net's premier video game podcast. I am Christopher Herman.
And I am Jonathan Roma.
And we're going to talk about some good video game stuff. We got a cool main topic today, suggested by one of our fans. John, we have fans.
It's really creepy. It's more like, oh my gosh. Like, sometimes I imagine that I'm talking into this microphone, and then after it's I put nothing. It on the internet, just, no one's listening, right? And then when I get an interaction, I'm like flattered and then surprised and like living in an alternate dream world. Yeah. So shout out to you guys. Thank you for doing that. You really made my day. I'm riding a wave of positivity after our breakfast pub takeover. Mm-hmm. You were telling me some people were asking about us and saying some good praise. And I'm like, bro, we talk week in, week out on We Are Air. Check us out Mondays and Fridays.
Getting better and better, you know, every week. Like you said, twice a week, you know, Mondays and Fridays. And, but yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you that what we're doing, that is having an effect on people. And I think that's always great.
Yeah.
And the fact that I hope to continue to expand the audience, you know, going forward.
And to be frank, they're kind of having an effect on me and like pointing out games that I don't really think about in the comments. If we want to kind of use that as our transition.
Yeah, let's go into
it. Give some shout outs. I think, what do we want to talk about? Nick Thighs, he pointed out for some of his underrated picks. Nick Thighs of the UGO podcast, which we've
unapologetic geek out.
Yeah, we've been on a couple episodes talking Mass Effect. I talked about the Assassin's Creed movie.
Yep.
Not good. I fell asleep. but he wanted to give a shout out to Brutal Legend. I think, Chris, you had mentioned this,
I mentioned
right?
it, yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of the RTS segments, but I know some people are.
Yeah, I don't particularly like them in like the multiplayer, which that game didn't really need multiplayer to begin with.
I never played the multiplayer.
I liked the regular third person combat in the game, and just its aesthetic and the voice acting's great. Great Jack Black, underrated actor.
He also noted that you like this Femme Shep is in the game.
Yeah, Jennifer Hale.
Yeah.
You know what else Jennifer Hale voice acted in?
What?
Totally Spies. Remember that mid-2000s
series? Wait, with the like three girls, one's wearing pink, one's wearing green, one's wearing yellow.
One's wearing red, one's wearing green, one's wearing yellow.
I'm sexist.
Jennifer Hale voiced Sam, the smart one, who
was
wore
green.
Green.
Oh my god, why do I remember that?
Because it's part of our generation,
it's a
man. We're
good
millennials.
Show,
we're millennials. It was good. It was entertaining. It taught nice life lessons. It taught you to love yourself no matter what you looked like. It taught you to be respectful of others, and you get to see the cool spy action stuff.
Yeah, and like three badass women. I never realized that either. Like, you know, when parents are like, "Don't watch that. It's a girls' show." It's like, I don't think kids notice.
Listen, Kim Possible, man, fantastic series.
She banging too.
Yeah. you got a thing for redheads.
No, I just Kim Possible is a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Michael Vanderpool. He spelt it out for me, and I really hope I'm reading it. Reading it correctly.
No, we appreciate that. You know, yeah. that's not being sarcastic. That we
no, like I was very confused.
Yeah, Paul Vanderpool.
Yeah, so like when I read it, it's like Paul.
Oh, okay, got
Paul.
It. Got it.
Yeah, because I got confused with pool, and I feel like the way it was spelled. But anyway, he said. Well, first off, he said I had it right the first time. He said he has not played Contra 4. And actually, he said something interesting. He hasn't played a Nintendo system past the N64.
That's pretty incredible.
He said since the PlayStation came out and his two favorite franchises shifted over, Metal Gear and Final Fantasy,
yeah.
He was just like, fuck Nintendo. Mm. I'm still like, fuck Nintendo. Sometimes.
I get it.
But he did say Spec Ops The Line is amazing. Yep. Brutal Legend. A lot of praise for Brutal Legend.
People love that game. Double Fine, man.
Said it's great, too. He was hesitant about Wolfenstein New Order, but once I played it, I thought it was fantastic. Great mix of serious and emotional moments, fun gameplay, and just plain weird. He mentions a part where a Nazi lady has her boy toy's hand down her pants while showing you some disturbing imagery.
Yeah, her German plaything. It's wonderful.
I'm telling you, he kind of sold me on it when he said that because I was like, that game gets weird. I'm down.
Mm-hmm.
Other titles he'd like to suggest: Legends of Dragoon, Alice Madness Returns, which I hear a lot about.
Yeah.
Shadows of the Damned, Folklore. I think it was an early PS3 game. Lollipop Chainsaw and Shadowrun, as well as Assassin's Creed Liberation. He says, I think Aveline was a great character.
I call her Aveline, yeah.
And I really can't think of another game whose lead character is a black woman, which instantly I was like, I gotta get on that. Like the Assassin's Creed, like I like the Assassin's Creed formula, so there's a lot of like side games. I think the Chronicle series specifically with really diverse characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I don't know. Once I've taken a couple years off from Assassin's Creed at this point where I think I'm ready to jump back into one.
Yeah. I've actually played Assassin's Creed Liberation. Well, I thought it was a decent game. The fact that you do play a black female character. I mean, I can't think of another game that does that.
Was this the French
Clementine,
one?
Maybe?
Was this French?
No, this was released alongside Assassin's Creed 3. And where this takes place in Louisiana during like the 1750s, right before kind of the American Revolution. 1750s, like then it kind of goes from there then to like 1760s or 1770s, things like that. But there's one mission where you interact with, you know, Mr. Mope himself, Connor. But I mean, she was, honestly, she should have been the star of Assassin's Creed 3 because she was great. She was my favorite thing about the game.
Yeah, and Connor.
So great pick there.
Yeah. Birdie the Critic also shouted out Spec Ops The Line. I really need to play this game, apparently.
Mm-hmm. You have it. I noticed that,
so I'm going to get on it. In terms of underrated franchises, I want to reiterate Dino Crisis. He had mentioned this in an earlier comment, which is funny. We've talked about possibly talking about dinosaurs.
Yep.
So he gave a shout-out to Dino Crisis. He thinks I think this is more in relation to bringing things back, but he also said he wants to see another Perfect Dark. He claims, but I think the series mix of espionage combat with ridiculous alien weapons and enemies could make a comeback. It isn't any more ridiculous than Gears of War or the Halo franchises, which like, yeah, Joanna Dark has not been around, what, now 10 years, I think?
Yeah, it has. Well, you know, because they Microsoft kind of fucked up with the last game.
Yeah, it's a rare owned property, right?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, so I mean, they still have it. I mean, if they were to do like a total like redesign or something like maybe like what Bethesda's doing with Prey, I could totally see that with Perfect Dark. Microsoft taking a similar approach where it's that type of world, but like going really crazy.
I think it's an easy sell at least. That
world.
He also mentioned Golden Sun. I'm not a big JRPG guy like you, but.
I did not play that.
And he also noted Remember Me, which was a Capcom game. I remember it was. He notes a combo beat 'em up that allows you to pick specific combos for quick access to design your combat style, combined with a sci-fi future about people who steal and sabotage memories, a la Inception, which was one of those late 360 games. I think maybe two years before it, like really, like the one took over.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a late new IP from Capcom. Had that. Inception vibe. I never got too much hands-on time with it, but I thought it was like really interesting.
Yeah.
Just never took off. I would really love to see that world explored again. Something with that whole concept. So,
this developer did Remember Me, and they did. I forget what the hell the name of it was, but it's like when you play a teenage girl in like Oregon or whatever, and you get like time control powers or whatever.
Blinks the Cat.
No, it's not Blinks the Cat. I forget what it is, but you continue. I looked that up.
Singularity.
Right now. No, it's not Singularity. Singularity, that's another underrated game.
I think actually someone had mentioned that at some point, or maybe when I was looking, trying to come up with some underrated games. I can't even think of who designed Remember Me, though.
I am looking it up now. It is Don. It's a French. It's a French.
I knew it was French. I don't know.
Don Tetaud Entertainment. I'm gonna say that, and they.
Oh, I bet that was so wrong.
Well, yeah, it was like it's not. I think I keep thinking of Stranger Things, but Strange is in the title of the game. It's like a. Max, the main character's name is Max. She's like a, you know, a hippie
stranger
girl.
In the woods. Oh, Stranger Than Life.
Life is strange. Life is strange. That's it. Fucking new. We worked on it.
Nailed it.
I remember playing that.
But one.
Not hippie hipster. That's what she was. Yeah, and then the other character, Chloe, sucked in the game. But continue on.
Never played. But yeah, those are all the big ones that I noticed. Yeah. Be sure if you're listening, sign off in these comments, let us know what's going on, and point out some games that we missed, because now apparently I need to play Spec Ops the Line and totally reevaluate my thoughts on Brutal Legend.
Yeah, I do not own that game, but we should. That maybe possibly Spec Ops the Line should be a retro review in
yeah,
the future.
That'd
sometime.
Be cool. Yeah. Give me extra reason to play it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely. So now we're going to talk about the news. So we got some pretty interesting stories this week. One of the things that kind of shocked me was that Sony has dropped PlayStation Now support for PS3 and Vita. Sony will significantly scale back the number of devices that support PlayStation Now this year. On the PlayStation blog, the company announced plans to end PlayStation Now services for PlayStation 3, Vita, and other devices on August 15th. That includes PlayStation TV, Sony Bravia TVs from 2013 to 2015, Sony Blu-ray players, and Samsung TVs. In fact, Sony plans on only supporting PlayStation 4 and PC for PlayStation Now going forward. After thoughtful consideration, we decided to shift our focus and resources to PS4 and Windows PC to further develop and improve the user experience on these two devices, said PlayStation Now Senior Marketing Manager Brian Dunn. This move puts us in the best position to grow the service even further. PlayStation Now launched in 2014. The streaming service then arrived on PC just last year. I think maybe monetarily this makes sense, but I think this is a huge mistake, and it's really alienating the PlayStation Vita players, where I love my Vita, and I primarily play many of my PS3 games and on my Vita. Like, I played the Sly Cooper trilogy on it, and some of those other games, like some of the Ratchet and Clank games, like the collection, the PS3 collection. It's like, yeah, it works perfectly. It's so good. And the fact that now that service is ending, it's just like, that's incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, like, I understood the PS3 cut that out. Like, that's fine.
That's fine.
Stop supporting that. But you're barely supporting the Vita as is.
Yeah, it's like either of those people even more.
I kind of hate that, like, they haven't officially just said, oh, we're done with Vita yet. I just need you to say it. Just please just say it, yeah. So I don't keep holding on. Because now there's a sale on PlayStation right now where all the Final Fantasies are on sale. Mm-hmm. I'm about to spend like 60 bones getting Final Fantasy 3 through 9 for my Vita specifically.
Get those games. Get those. You already got 4. You didn't get 4, did you? You gotta get 4, 5, 6.
I haven't got them
yet. Skip the other ones. You can skip 7 because it's not that good.
I haven't played. It's a game changer. Yeah. Turned 20 this year. Or 25.
It did. It was a couple months ago, right?
Yeah.
In January?
Yeah. At like the very end of January. Mm-hmm. Also, I forgot it worked in TVs.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that.
That seems really cool. Just like a big seller for TVs. Oh, I don't need a console? Sweet.
That is weird. Yeah.
Could you stream PS4 games on it? On PS Now? Or is it just PS3 and below?
I think it's PS3 and below.
And I have no idea why you just wouldn't bake that into your Sony TVs. I
believe that's how it works.
Or like, I don't know, because I could see this in a sense of, why would I get a PS4 if I can stream a PS4 game?
Yeah.
So like,
yeah. So I don't think you can't.
Okay,
like,
that would make sense.
Yeah.
But just for the TVs, at least bake that into it. And it sounds so like, I don't know. It can't be that hard, right?
Yeah.
And you can sell all the DualShocks you want. Low price of $60. Why are controllers so expensive?
You can buy those crappy PS3 controllers. Yeah,
they're cheaper than the Joy-Cons.
Yeah, no, they certainly are. Yeah. Moving on. Some of Take-Two Interactive's most popular franchises might soon be turned into movies, according to a new report. MCV reports that the company has licensed some of its IP for potential film adaptations. Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick said the company will not be using any of its own money to fund these films and TV projects. Smart move. Take-Two is instead more interested in having creative control over the final product through licensing deals. Zelnick also mentioned just how unsuccessful most video game movies have been thus far. This is one of the main reasons why Take-Two Interactive won't fund these movies and why it doesn't have anything to announce beyond these licensing deals, according to Zelnick. If other people want to license them and we can retain creative control, we are open-minded, Zelnick told MCV. The track record of the conversation of video game IP to motion picture is spotty at best. Take-Two Gaming... Take-Two's gaming IP includes those games published by 2K Games like Bioshock and Mafia and Rockstar game titles like Grand Theft Auto and Red Dead Redemption. Zelnick did not specify which franchise had been licensed, however. A film adaptation of one of 2K Games' franchises, Borderlands, was already announced as in development of Lionsgate in 2015. I don't think that's going anywhere. Last year, several video game movies hit theaters. Angry Birds, Warcraft, Ratchet & Clank, and Assassin's Creed. Warcraft director Duncan Jones is still waiting to hear about a sequel. One of the next upcoming video game movies is Tomb Raider, starring Oscar winner Alicia Vikander. The film will be inspired by the new games from developer Crystal Dynamics. I'm actually looking forward to Tomb Raider because, I mean, it has a great cast. You know, they seem to very much inspired by the newer games. However, I said the same thing about Assassin's Creed. Great cast and all that.
But. Yeah, like, that's what I was, it was weird. With those last two paragraphs alone, you named all those video game movies. I was like, trash, 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 trash.
I don't think Warcraft is trash. I think Warcraft is it's super ambitious, and they focused, I think, on – they focused on the orc storyline, great. The human storyline, fuck those. Fuck the humans. We don't need them.
I'm just not a big Warcraft fan in the first place.
Sure.
But also, when you got to the Alicia Vikander Tomb Raider thing, I was like, I'm so fucking hype.
Yeah.
I'm so ready for that game. Or that movie. both. if you can get Alicia Vikander modeled for a new Tomb Raider game, I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Have you seen Ex Machina?
Yeah, I own it.
Okay. That's a spectacular film. Mm-hmm. And if she does even half the performance she does in that movie, Tomb Raider gonna be good.
Oh, I don't expect anything less from her in terms of her performance. I think that like Laura Croft is a character. I mean, you could definitely get into that.
She looks exactly like the new Laura. Yeah.
I mean, she looks like it, and I think what they're gonna obviously focus on is just the survival aspect of Laura Croft. You know, that struggle where it's like
very much like the reboot where it's like
exactly
her first time kind of getting acclimated to how it is,
and to the tomb raiding, as it is often called.
It's got to be better than the first two movies.
Oh yeah, it has to be of Angelina Jolie. And now in regards to like Take Two Interactive, I like the fact that they're taking a very kind of careful approach to this in terms of like their properties. Like, yeah, we're gonna be in charge of licensing stuff, but we're not gonna fund them. So if they suck, then
isn't at the same time. Well, like that is a smart move first off, but like. Isn't a mafia movie? Wouldn't that just be The Godfather, basically?
I guess kind of.
I don't need to see it. Grand Theft Auto, I don't need to see it. I just don't need to see it. Red Dead Redemption, sure. And Bioshock, please don't ruin that for me.
I mean, I mean, there was rumors about a Bioshock film years ago. Gore Verbinski attached.
There's a lot of rumors about a Bioshock everything. Remember when Bioshock was going to be ported to Vita? Because it never happened.
Yeah, no, that was Bioshock Infinite. That's when he's supposed to be ported to Vita. But like, you know, Gore Verbinski, he was gonna do the Bioshock film. Of course, he most recently came out with what the film was. The film called
Valerian.
No,
is that him?
No, that's Cure for Wellness. I don't like. It's Cure for Wellness. He did that, which I've heard very mixed things about.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Like, out of all the IPs, that Bioshock is the one I want to see. Maybe you can do a Bioshock film, but it's only kind of connected to the previous two entries in the franchise. Do something completely different and new. You know, just have the lighthouse, a man in the lighthouse. That's all you need.
That would be actually pretty good because it would fit in with the whole thing about it just always starts with a man in a lighthouse and then make a completely different story. That would actually work. Okay. You got me.
There we go. Speaking of game studios, EverQuest co-creator John Smedley is leading a new San Diego-based studio for Amazon Game Studios, the company announced. Yeah. Smedley, previously the president of Sony Online Entertainment and Daybreak Game Company, will lead an all-new team in San Diego on an unannounced title. In a release, Amazon said Smedley's ambitious new project will tap into the power of AWS Cloud and Twitch to connect players around the globe in a thrilling new game world. I do not like the sound of that. John's pioneering work helped define the modern MMO, and his influence can be felt in thousands of games that followed, Amazon said in a statement. He helped create the blueprint for fusing massive game worlds with vibrant player communities, a vision that we share at Amazon Game Studios. Amazon says Amazon says Amazon Game Studio San Diego's project is still in early days. Smedley stepped down as CEO and president of Daybreak Game Company in 2015. Later that year, he founded Pixel Mage Games, which developed action role-playing games Hero Son. In 2016, both Pixel Mage Games and Hero Son shut down. Amazon Game Studio has other locations in Orange County, California, and Seattle. In Seattle, Washington. The company is working on a handful of announced games for PC, including a mythological sport brawler, Breakaway, massively multiplayer sandbox game New World, and sci-fi survival game Crucible. Do you ever play EverQuest back in the day, John?
No, Adelaide.
I'm just kidding.
No. I was like seven when
yeah.
I was at it.
Oh, yeah, you were like in diapers still.
Yeah.
I never played EverQuest, although I have heard of this guy's work. I mean, I'm not surprised that Amazon's trying to get into the video game business. Though,
isn't everyone at this point?
At this point, yeah. Like, you have Fox going for it.
Annapurna,
which is very surprising.
I'm really surprised. I'm most excited by that one. Mm-hmm. Because that one feels more like a passion project. This one seems like Amazon just wants their hands in everything.
This feels like we're just going to go for like these massively multiplayer kind of like social media type games, they don't have enough depth for me to have any interest.
It's because they require too much of my time and don't give me enough back.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I play so few of them. Some if at all. Yep. Now this is something interesting. Interesting, John.
Yeah, yeah.
Nintendo has announced an Nintendo has announced an expansion pass.
Not editing that out.
Expansion pass, John, for Breath of the Wild, offering the first ever DLC in a main series Legend of Zelda game. Available from March 3rd for $19.99 or $17.99 fake Australian money. The expansion patch, which will be available for both the Wii U and Nintendo Switch versions of the game, will offer two extra content packs to be released later in 2017, neither of which can be purchased individually.
Because Nintendo loves to find a way to fuck you.
The details of each are Pack 1, Summer 2017, a new Cave of Trials challenge.
That sounds really cool.
Hard mode.
Fuck you.
A new feature for the in-game map.
And fuck yourself.
Pack 2... Holiday 2017, a new dungeon.
That one's good.
A new original story.
That's also really good.
With quotation marks around original story. And additional challenges. Purchasing the expansion pass will also immediately unlock three extra treasure chests in the game's Great Plateau location. Two will contain useful items, quotation marks, while more unusually, the third will include a shirt with a Nintendo Switch logo, which Link can wear during his adventure.
Yep.
Quotation marks. Yep. Breath of the Wild will be released for Wii U and Nintendo Switch on March 3rd, along with the Switch console itself. I mean, first of all, the fact that, you know, now that Nintendo is pursuing, you know, expansion passes, like, well, of course they are. You know, they want to at least attempt to compete at this point.
They have to, yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, we're you know, we can do this too. The problem is it's like, from what I've seen, what they're describing is something like, I do not care.
Well,
particularly for, like, a Pack 1.
Yeah, Pack 1 is trash.
You're going to get hard mode. That's not in the game already?
Okay, yeah, really, though. Why is that not in the game?
Or an update to the in-game map? What? So it's like a patch, basically, because you didn't have enough time to fix something. Yes. Okay, great.
That actually pisses me off. How is there not a hard mode?
Nintendo games aren't hard, John.
I just don't understand that. That's a basic thing.
It's very weird. I mean, they're just we got to put something in this. We got to have some content. Because you know why they're doing this? Maybe the fact that they're like, oh, no, you can continue to play Zelda is because they don't have anything in between. You know, until the next Mario game and some of the
bro, crap. I've been saying this every ep. Snipper clips?
Yeah. Is that the one where you're milking a cow or cutting? What the hell is it?
That's a 1-2 switch.
That's 1-2 switch.
And you just like, basically what you're doing is making sweet eye contact with your partner, just doing a jerk off motion.
Oh, is that it?
Wait until the cow does its thing.
I got it.
You have to do it really fast.
Gotta do it fast.
You have to do it in
the I slow it down? Can I go like, because I have various
If you want to play the game for longer, yeah.
I mean, I don't want it to go too fast. Yeah, it's like the pleasure's over too quickly.
Yeah, so, naturally.
Like you want to have it go on a little longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much like these expansion packs for Legend of Zelda. You want it to go on as long as possible.
I'm just, I don't know. It's a bad move, I think. Yeah. Just the way they're rolling out with it, it very much feels like Nintendo wants to do what their competitors are doing, but doesn't know how.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes through a lot in just a lot of their online offerings in general. That's why I'm, again, just hesitant to really want to pay them.
Ready to not watch Netflix, Joe?
basic thing. Yeah. What else? But at least it, I think we talked about this before. This one's pretty cheap. I think they're doing better on prices in terms of things like that. So, because like I said, the online service is going to be less than $30 apparently. Mm. This is only $20, which really isn't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Typically for what, a Call of Duty thing, you have to pay like a whole nother game.
Yeah, it's like $50.
Yeah. And so like, I don't know. I do hate the fact that you can't buy them individually.
That's what I wouldn't bring up. I've never seen something like
that.
That's
really fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's just like, well, I don't want to buy your stupid pack one. It's a patch.
That's clearly why they won't let you buy them separately. Yeah. Because they're like, we need to find a... They probably could not come up with enough new content that they were like, well, we need to find some way to make it last. Very much that summer one feels like a stopgap. Like, we need to have something in the middle, because especially come summer, say they don't get the hits they want, they have another thing to point out to, like, come summer, hey, you can get Mario and extra content for The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
And Splatoon 2. It's just Splatoon.
Even though it's not a sequel. Yeah, exactly.
It's just fucking
Splatoon again. It's just with a new coat of paint, John.
And also they're trying to ruin the game by adding in a shirt. That's just gonna break me. The shirt better be green. Well, that's
least,
all I'm saying.
At least it's not a cup noodle hat like in the most recent Final Fantasy 15 download.
I don't know. I think they're in on the joke.
I remember when I had my first cup noodles. It was a life-changing experience.
What do you prefer?
Thanks, Gladio.
What's your favorite ingredient to add to your cup noodles?
Oh, my favorite ingredient is shrimp. It's so zesty. Oh, it's wonderful, John. I just appreciate it so much.
Did you memorize that?
You should buy cup noodles. I don't know. I'm just doing this commercial. I might as well have, you know, because I was just shocked by it.
Something we didn't put in the notes, but did you see the leak of Nintendo Switch's OS?
I did not.
Okay, well, first off, what are you doing? We run a video game podcast, Chris.
I've been busy.
second, I watched it. Yeah. It functions. It does what it's supposed to do. It looks really cool. The screen looks really nice turned on. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks like an actual fucking screen, not like whatever the garbage 480p potato that the Wii U screen was. But it looks really, really nice, really slick, very modern. Tablet-esque. It is touchscreen. I keep forgetting whether it was or not.
It should be. Get my fingerprints on it.
But my main problem was, this console comes out in, what, 2 weeks now?
Yeah, it's crazy.
How had we not seen the OS yet?
It's because it means that they're afraid to reveal anything.
I'm like literally so confused. This console comes out in 2 weeks. I know nothing about it. Like, I don't understand what it looks like yet.
I think the majority of people don't really know about it. Just the people like us, and you know, all the people in the games media, like, they're in touch with it. They know when the Switch is coming out, but like, your everyday person, like, they're like, oh yeah, I guess that is coming out.
Yeah, my friends have not mentioned it at all. Mm-hmm. They haven't asked me about it. They haven't been like, hey, did you see the new Nintendo thing? I think maybe one out of them asked about it. My dad's mentioned it because he, you know, likes to keep up with Nintendo occasionally. My brother has not mentioned one thing. It's not looking good.
No,
that's all
not.
I'm gonna say.
One thing I want to ask is, I don't watch like cable. Have there been any commercials for it? Consistently every day or something?
Well,
like,
you do realize that I'm under the age of 30, correct?
Yeah.
So I do not own cable.
I don't either. That's the thing. So I don't know like how the marketing can't. Like, I see ads for it like online. Like
they had
YouTube
one during
stuff,
the Super Bowl, didn't they?
I believe. I don't care. Oh, I'm not watching watch the Super Bowl. I'm not watching pages, your hand pages, egg, as I like to call it.
The what?
Hand egg. That's what it's called. You watch the Lady Gaga halftime show?
I did, and I was really hoping for Migos to just like show up.
You know,
raindrop, drop top.
I don't like that. I don't understand what you're saying. I don't like it. They should have Beyonce come out. She could have came out like her with CeeLo and that like golden couple or whatever the hell it is.
Now we're just digging into pop culture memory. We should probably just kick it to
the
same
time. We apologize. Hey, let's talk about
ludonarrative dissonance.
Yeah. Debating how we're going to open this like second segment, and so we figured that we'd do this bit about like, oh, Nathan Drake, he loves to kill people, isn't that great? And I would have said, oh, he's such a charming rogue, that's why we love him. But both of us forgot like who should go first with the bit, and we just kind of sat there in silence for like 2 seconds and like, oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah, I'm just like pointing at you like we're live.
It was your idea.
I know, but you're the opener, and I like try and come off. Cuff what you're doing.
You need a little awkwardness. You need a little awkwardness in every weird error episode. Just like
That's like, the error. That's the error part. We're trying to work through the glitches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So obviously we're talking about stuff like lunar narrative dissonance and gameplay v story.
I thought that had something to do with the moon. You said lunar narrative?
Lunar narrative dissonance is when the moon is on fire and it's actually giving off warmth and it's daytime.
No, it's the moon in Majora's Mask that's constantly going, when he's looking at me.
He's just like trying. Your dissonance. Face is just like, I'm trying to share it. this topic, I think we had mentioned it at the end of last week's episode, but this topic was actually brought up to us by Birdie the Critic. Apparently, he does not love the Uncharted franchise.
I don't think he's actually a critic. I'm calling him out right there.
The large words. I'm sure he'll let you have it in the comments.
Birdie, you're a great guy.
But still let him have it in the comments, please. I'm like asking you.
Please,
to do this.
Please
let
me have it.
He brought up when we were talking, I think, overrated games, maybe.
No, it was the one before underrated games.
It was franchises you wanted to see come back.
Yeah.
And he has a problem he noted with the Uncharted franchise, how the gameplay and story don't quite mesh for him.
Mm-hmm.
There are two different types of way to look at this. He had actually mentioned both of them where he thinks the story, he thinks the gameplay is just not good.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't think the shooting ever really fleshed itself out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also noted in a later comment that what you're doing in the game never matches up story-wise, which that I can't argue with. I will argue all day that, yes, Uncharted 1 isn't really great at the gameplay. It comes in that era where everyone's trying to ape Gears.
Yeah, at that time.
And so, like, after Gears kind of perfected it straight from the jump, everyone else after that just... it's too clunky. But I think they fix that by 2, 3, and by 4. It's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But he is right, and that's what that topic of ludonarrative dissonance is. That word, that phrase, is not actually about the moon. It was a term coined by Clint Hocking, a former creative director at LucasArts, then at Ubisoft, on his blog in October 2007. He actually coined the term in response to Bioshock. According to him, the game promoted the theme of self-interest through gameplay while promoting the opposing theme of selflessness through its narrative. And that's what ludonarrative dissonance is. It's whenever the story is telling you something different, but your actions in the game don't ever line up. That's why I think Uncharted is actually the perfect example.
It's what you're experiencing in the moment as opposed to the grander idea.
Yeah, and Uncharted, to me, really, really gets it because, like you said, we see Drake as this puckish rogue. He's just so charming and he's just fun loving.
Handsome.
And he's just a nice, cool guy.
Yeah.
When for 12 hours of gameplay, you're just shooting people because you want some treasure.
Shooting a bunch of foreign people. Pretty much. Like in the first game, you're shooting nothing but brown people. And that's just like, ooh, this kind of makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
But it's fine. By the fourth game, everyone's
killing Russians. You kill Russians in the next game. It's fine.
But the thing about it is that's never mentioned in the story, really. In the story, it mentions that he gets shot at a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But we just kind of, scoot over the fact that he's killed many of people.
Shot all those people back. He's justified in some cases. But yeah, that's I guess I never thought of it that way until it was actually like brought up in and I don't know if you ever watched like Zero Punctuation, those reviews, but he's often a very critical critic.
Yes.
And that was kind of one of the things that he brought up, what he disliked about the Uncharted games was the fact that Nathan Drake's a psychopath, and how it doesn't kind of make sense with the overall narrative because of that. And I guess, now it's kind of become like a running joke in the series that even Naughty Dog kind of laughs it off and goes, But
that was actually a trophy in the fourth game for killing like 1,000 people.
Yeah.
It's just called ludonarrative dissonance, which I think is great.
Oh, it is? Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's called ludonarrative
dissonance. Oh, okay.
It's great.
Yeah. But yeah, just for me, in regards to that, I just never felt bothered by it, like, in the moment, because I, even though I was enjoying, because I was enjoying the story so much at that time. It's like, yeah, the gameplay was fine. It was competent. It got better as it went along, but I was always there to get to the next really cool character interaction or puzzle or, you know, some part of like the environmental storytelling, things like that. That's what kept me invested in the game. And that's why it kind of ended up being my favorite game of last year.
Yeah. It was, I keep going back and forth now. Mm-hmm. In the moment, definitely. In 2016, Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
But I'm still getting back into Enter the Gungeon.
Oh, my God.
That game's the shit. But, God, I lost my point because Enter the Gungeon's so good.
Yeah.
No. But
no, you're good.
I think, especially when I think about that topic, it's sort of – there are certain games that it's kind of – you just can't avoid that. Mm-hmm. I think, like, what are you supposed to do in Uncharted if you can't shoot people?
Yeah, exactly. At that point, you kind of just want a movie at that point.
Yeah. And you're just, I guess you could put more exploration and more set pieces, but you can't play defense for 10 hours at a time.
Yeah. Cause
it would get boring.
It becomes a walking sim pretty much.
Yeah. Which one of my favorite games, Gone Home, I think is a good example of how gameplay and story can really match up.
I haven't played it, so I can't make a declarative statement. But I will say, from what I have observed through Let's Plays, it's the gameplay is just there for you to continue to pursue the story, continue on your actions to get more of those great bits of it. You're on to the next whatever revelation. The gameplay itself isn't interesting, but it's the next thing that you find that propels the narrative forward.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of touches on another topic, in another angle in which to kind of view gameplay v story.
Yeah.
Is which one is more important?
Yeah.
And why is it more important? In what is good gameplay? When is it necessary? And I think in the case of Gone Home, story is very much the focus from the jump. And the kind of story they're trying to tell is very slow and it's kind of tense. And it's meant to have you explore a foreign place, but one that also feels at home.
Yeah.
And the gameplay, you know, kind of personifies that for me. It's, you can't really run very fast. I think you might have two speeds, but you might actually just have one. Mm-hmm. It's a rainy night, and you are just creeping through this house that, as a player, you've never been to.
Yeah.
So you are taken aback by each new thing. Everything's a sense of discovery. But at the same time, little things like certain music from the 90s or certain things that you remember about, like, this is how we used to write notes back in the day. Those things jog your memory to where things start to feel familiar,
yeah.
Where it matches the character who is – this is her childhood home. She remembers the place.
Yeah.
But she's been studying abroad. She's been off at college. So things have happened in her family and things have changed in her house where it's like not quite home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the way the story unfolds and the way you as a character interact with it, the gameplay, the walking sim, as I know people like to call them, which I guess it is. But I think in this case, that's the kind of gameplay I would want for this story, to slowly watch it unfold and walk through the story, basically.
You don't need an entire section where you're just fighting random enemies. You're not fighting ghosts or anything in that game.
I don't need to find some elaborate puzzle to try and piece together the voice recordings from the answering machine to try and find out where my parents are or something.
It's like sometimes gameplay doesn't need to be as kinetic as something like, you know, say, you know, like a God of War or whatever like that, where it's like you're playing this for the gameplay, but everything else in the game itself isn't very working all that well, in my opinion. But for Gone Home, like, the gameplay suits the type of game that the developer wanted to create. It makes sense because it fits overall. Like, this was their original vision, where it's like I'm constantly going back and forth what I find to be most valuable, you know, when it comes to my gaming experience. Like I said, majority of the games that I tend to think about are ones where it does have a great narrative or does have like that a wonderful character moment that just sticks in my head. I mean, that goes into the fact that I played so many RPGs where the focus, you know, throughout my life, where the focus was always on characters and stories and environmental storytelling. Gameplay kind of always took like a back, you know, like a second seat to that. But the gameplay still served the game well, you know, overall, where I still had fun playing it.
Yeah, I as you know, it's kind of becoming a run-in thing where you're the RPG guy and I'm the character platformer.
Yeah, exactly.
In the PS2 era.
Which is very different.
Yeah, you know. But when I think about those, it does come down to the reason I love the Jack and Daxter franchise is because Daxter and Jack, I love their characterization and I love the kind of playfulness that they have. And I think Birdie even mentioned how he thinks Jack 2 is a nice little in between in the entire franchise, where the first one doesn't have enough story, I believe he said, and then the third one just kind of gets overloaded and bloated with features, whereas he thinks the second one has that nice mix. To me, it was always about the characters in those games. The same with Sly and Ratchet. Like, the gameplay is fun.
Yeah.
The game, but at some point, and I think after so many years of playing games, that I kind of feel that at some point the gameplay is just recycled. It is a developer adding little trickles, and the way you get me interested at this point is worlds and characters and great writing. I think about some of my favorite games like Kingdom Hearts, and I think Gone Home is one of my tops. It's I'm more invested in the people that are created. Although Birdie did, you know, he knew I was going to mention Kingdom Hearts. He actually thinks it's the only good one in terms of narrative and gameplay. And I can kind of see that. Like, Kingdom Hearts 2 has good gameplay, but the world designs, as he noted, often feel like the game is coming to a halt for bullshit side quests or just to watch scenes from Disney movies. Whereas in the first one, it feels much more organic and like you're on this search. So that's why you're traveling to the worlds. And like, it feels like each action has causation, whereas I can see what he means by in the second one. And in later entries, it becomes, I want to see this cool world.
It's very interesting you bring that up, because like how you can have gameplay that is consistently good or awesome, like in every single like entry in the franchise, but it becomes stale after a while. I kind of had that more recently, like when we reviewed Mega Man, the Mega Man collection, like a couple of months ago, a Legacy collection. And, you know, I played, you know, 2 and 3, and they're like, oh, these are great. And then I moved on to 4, and I liked it. Then 5, I'm thinking, okay.
I get it.
And those games are pure gameplay. There is a story, but not really. It's just like, there's some text on the screen, and just, you know, basically it kicks your butt to the point where it's like, okay, now you got to defeat all these, you know, 8 or 6 robot masters. That's what you do in each and every single game. And sometimes the levels change. Like, there's small little things, but it's not enough where it kept me, like, I felt like I had to go play Mega Man 6. It's like, I played these Mega Man games.
I understand what 6 is by playing 4.
Exactly. But the gameplay is still consistently good. But at that point, it's like, I need more. I need something more. That's why I think when you tend to bring in more story elements into a franchise, then it can become potentially more interesting. You know, I know you're not going to agree with me here, but and for Gears of War, you know, Gears of War has excellent gameplay. But you can say that the franchise, I think in terms of what it established for third-person shooters, I think it has excellent gameplay. However, I like the fact that they made a concerted effort to move on in the story to present different things, like hint at more interesting, you know, like possible stories for the future. It's like, I'm interested in that, in addition to keep playing this consistent gameplay. Because the gameplay in Gears has always been kind of the same, but we like it.
No, yeah, I'll definitely agree with you there. Yeah. I love the first two. I love the first two Gears. The third one's good. It's fine. Fourth one is garbage.
Garbage.
I know.
You never played Judgment. Judgment's great.
Apparently.
Great.
No, but I think in that sense, too, the gameplay, in my experience with Gears, it was a co-op game.
Yeah.
And I think that form of gameplay, the way I played it with my brother, it really fit the story.
Mm-hmm.
That this is about brotherhood and these four guys who are going through the shit.
Yep.
And so when I'm playing it as a co-op game and those moments where the game forces you to split up and the great thing about the Gears co-op is when you're together with your co-op partner, death doesn't feel as intimidating because you fall down, your partner's there to pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if it's still like that in the third and second entry, but I remember in the first game that once you separate, if you die, the computer does not revive you. You lose.
Yeah.
And so, like, when that happens, it reminds me that, like, it gives off the sense that you're alone.
Right.
And so you never want to be away from your brothers in arms. And so I don't know. I really do think the gameplay helps complement the story in those first Gears entries. And I think you're right. The gameplay doesn't really change drastically. Mm-hmm. I think they add grenade tagging in the second.
Yep, grenade tagging.
I don't remember what the big feature was in 3, because I remember 2 like has the best multiplayer to most people.
Although some people say things like
that. Yeah. But see, even that is excess and bloat to some people.
Mm-hmm.
A la like the Jack 2, Jack 3 argument. It's diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And I think what keeps people coming back, at least in my sense, like I played 3 because I wanted to know what happened to Dom. I want to know what happens to Marcus, Cole, and Baird.
Yep.
And I think the only reason I will play Gears 5 is because I want to know how the humans keep fighting the locusts. I want to know what, you know, despite I don't think Marcus's son is characterized very well.
Nah, JD's great.
I want to know what happens to the Phoenix family, and I want to know what happens to his friends. And it's that's what's going to keep me going.
Exactly,
the gameplay has to reach a certain bar.
It has to be consistently good.
Yeah.
But I need more than consistently good. I guess my whole thing is that I just want I want the game world to be interesting, but have that consistent gameplay. But it has to keep, you know, evolving over time in terms of its storytelling, in terms of its, you know, the its narrative. You know, for me,
it's really. I mean, I agree with you. It's kind of funny that we're talking about video games.
Yeah,
and we're still saying that the gameplay is really what plays second fiddle in some. I mean, not second fiddle. In some cases, it does play second fiddle. I think. Gameplay just has to reach a certain bar. Like,
To reach a certain bar for me personally.
Yeah, but and again, this is definitely one of those topics that is just our opinion.
It's evolving as we continue to talk about.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah,
realize it's like, oh yeah.
Well, like it is. It's very contextual, really, because what were our top games of last year? Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think the gameplay is very good.
Competent gameplay.
But it's really about the story.
But then we had Doom, which is all about the game.
All about
the game. And I loved it.
The story means nothing.
But the thing about the gameplay in Doom, it's very different from most first-person shooters. It's arcadey, which we don't get many arcadey first-person shooters nowadays. Like, the only other one I can think of is Wolfenstein. And I loved that game because it was different in terms of its gameplay.
And I think when we talked Doom, I did talk about, like, I don't want too many.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then they get trite and they get stale.
Even if the gameplay is great.
Yeah. You can make 6 Dooms and you're going to get fucking bored by the third one if they don't evolve the story. Think about Assassin's Creed. I think Assassin's Creed is a perfect example because the gameplay in 2, in like 2,
huge,
two Brotherhood Revelations and 3, all the same. Why don't I really give a shit about 3 is because its character sucks.
Yeah. The story is awful in that game, and I didn't want to play it.
3 and Revelations are probably the exact same game, but the only reason I can get through Revelations because I fucking love who Ezio is, and I've carried through his entire life.
Yeah.
And that is what's going to keep me going. And I think I said in the first segment here, I think I'm ready to dive back into Assassin's Creed because at this point, I think the gameplay would feel fresh enough to where I could take a weaker story.
It's going to be a totally different type of story as well.
Yeah, it's like you're letting bars even out.
Yeah.
Another example, I think, in my top list is Enter the Gungeon. Mm-hmm. Another game that a lot of its mythos in story kind of comes from outside the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something you often talk about in Codexes.
Yeah.
With like your Mass Effects. A lot of that story is out of the way.
Mm-hmm. You have to look for it.
Yeah. And so in my case with Enter the Gungeon, it's all pure gameplay. And it will have me hooked I'll just sit there and play for 2 hours because I'm just – there's a moment in video games – and it's one of the reasons I love games. They're one of my favorite pastimes. It happens in games like Enter the Gungeon or maybe a Rocket League.
Mm.
And sometimes in a really good first-person shooter like Doom where your brain shuts off.
Yeah.
And you reach this peak of muscle memory euphoria where you are just looking at the screen and your thumbs and fingers are moving in this beautiful dance.
You're God.
I'm using this big hyperbolic language.
100% of your brain.
Yeah, I'm just using this big hyperbolic language to explain playing a game. But it really is this moment where just your muscles are taking over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the cases in which it's all gameplay and gameplay is all that matters.
Yeah.
But yeah, was there anything else in particular that you wanted to talk about? I think Birdie also noted stuff like Psychonauts and Portal, I think, are good examples of when both complement each other very well.
Well, because, especially with Portal, I mean, so much of the gameplay is the story itself.
Yeah.
It adds to the narrative, you know, particularly of like how the Portal gun works and how it works with the story and its origin. Very, very interesting stuff. I mean, one of the things I think I mentioned this previously, but I think like the idea of good gameplay is very subjective.
I know
some people may disagree with that, but probably one of the most beloved games of the last generation and right now is like the Bayonetta titles, you know, for their gameplay. Everyone says their gameplay is consistently good, but like I've played these games and I think that the gameplay's bad. I don't like it as hack and slash. I don't know what the fuck is going on. I can't see what's happening. The camera's not that particularly good.
You sound like such an old man.
Yeah, but it's like that. Like, I don't like hack and slash gameplay, but even though you've had games like Devil May Cry or God of War, which fucking that awesome. Is all about the gameplay. People continue to praise it. But it's just like, this doesn't work for me. I just don't think it is intuitive or as, you know, as fun.
I see some of those games as single player fighting games.
Mm-hmm.
A better story mode for your fighting games because they come down to combos. Not God of War necessarily.
Athena!
Although I think God of War is a good example of when the gameplay matches the story because the story is such about rage and murder and just killing to kill.
Yes.
And that's very much what the gameplay is. You can love or hate the gameplay and the story. I like them both.
Kratos.
But I think they really do fit.
Yeah. Now, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's one of the things why I'm interested about God of War, the new one that's coming out for the PS4, because they're focusing on the story with Kratos. Kratos had more character development in that 10-minute demo at E3 than he did in the however many games in the franchise, 5 or 6 games in the franchise, like between him and his son. That's what interests me about the game.
It's like 7 games.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, but that's what's like. It's the story, it's the narrative, it's the character interaction that made me go, oh, I'm interested in God of War, where I have never been in my life. I tried to give this franchise a chance multiple times. I played through 2 games, tried with 3, I'm like, this isn't for me. But with that, the fact that they're concentrating on a narrative, now I'm interested.
And isn't the gameplay kind of reflecting that as well? Like what I've seen from
Tomb Raider inspired.
Yeah, what I've seen from them playing, it's very slowed down. Mm-hmm. It's you take control of your son, don't you? And he...
I think there's some parts of the game that you do.
And you're teaching him to hunt. And it's
very, very Last of Us.
Yeah. And it's kind of showing that in the story, that father-son relationship is going to be very close.
Mm-hmm.
So in the gameplay, it's reflecting that, where you are going to get to taking over that.
Both are complementing each other.
Yeah. I do kind of want to go back to Portal, Psychonauts,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that he mentions how the levels are really built out in this environment. Mm-hmm. And it comes down, I think, in gameplay, like the level design and how it complements your story.
Yeah.
I think Psychonauts is a good example of that and how a story is about like traveling into mm-hmm. the minds of these campers and trying to figure out this mystery where, and so the gameplay is you... Like, the levels are different based on how these characters have been personified and what they think. And sometimes the humor comes through and what is in their mind is so different from how they act. I think that's one of the great examples of just storytelling without having to really storytell.
Yeah.
It is just silent narrative and letting the gameplay speak for itself
mm-hmm.
and really push your story forward. So, I don't know. I just wanted to say that I think Psychonauts is a really good example. And probably why it still holds up, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those guys. So I'm excited for the sequel. But, yeah, I'm just trying to think if there's, like, anything else that – because it's so weird because I start thinking, like, oh, gameplay is always king. It's like it has to be. But I realize, like, no, I don't think it does. For me. And I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me, but it's just for my video game experience, it's very different. Depends on the kind of game I'm playing, I guess.
Yeah, I think
what I place more importance on.
Something there are a couple games I do want to mention. Ones I haven't been able to get into very mm-hmm. much is the Dark Souls franchise.
I'm all about Dark Souls. Now that's an example where, however,
why are you into it? I've heard people really into the tough challenge of the gameplay, the like chip away, slowly learn. But then there are certain people I've heard that they're like, there's a vast, rich lore in here that you have to hunt for. Yeah. But that's what keeps them going, because they really want to know about the mythos of the world. So I was wondering, like, as someone who has played it, what do you really think
it's,
is important?
It's weird that you bring that up, because I really enjoy Dark Souls. I love the series. I'm actually playing through Dark Souls 3 right now because Gamefly sent me the wrong game. but I have very conflicting emotions with it, because I, for one thing, I think that the gameplay in Dark Souls is very challenging, very interesting in what it's doing, how it's constantly fighting against the player at all times. But you feel this sense of achievement when you defeat enemies, because it's like anytime you lose, it's always your fault. It's always your fault. However, the gameplay is also very obtuse. There's things about it that don't make any sense. Enemies clip through walls. Weapons clip through walls. They can hit you at any time. It's just like there's parts about the gameplay that don't work, but at the same time, it just kind of adds to the difficulty.
The idea of the game fighting you.
Yeah, exactly. And it works that way. Now, in terms of its narrative, I don't give a shit about the narrative. I never cared about the – I don't care about the lore in Dark Souls because I don't fucking understand it. I've watched like – documentaries that people create, like 30-minute, you know, docs about the world of Dark Souls or Bloodborne, you know, or most recently Neo, which is kind of Dark Souls inspired.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah, I've been very confused about Neo.
Very much. So it's not the same studio, but it's like, it's Ninja Theory who did like Ninja Gaiden and stuff like that. Another thing where it's like all about gameplay of that series. But it's just like, I don't give a shit. I'm there for the gameplay in that instance. Again, just going back to the fact that it depends on what game I'm playing, what I'm after. And in that case, it is for the gameplay. And the way the world looks, not so much like the
universe.
Lore, I don't give a fuck about it. Like, I don't care. There's a giant fat man in golden armor, and there's a giant lion man in golden armor. I'm thinking, they're fighting me. I don't give a shit. I killed one of them. The other guy ate the other guy. Now he's bigger. Oh, this is weird. I'm going to fight him anyway.
I keep coming up with new examples. Birdie had mentioned – or no, actually, I think it was Michael had mentioned Final Fantasy and Metal Gear moving over. And I thought about Metal Gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Metal Gear is an instance where story gets away in the way of gameplay.
Yep.
Which is very strange. Especially I don't think that rarely happens. I can't think of any other franchise that really does that. But Metal Gear is at this point kind of a joke, how there are instances where the story just needs to move out of the way.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I was recently listening to a discussion about I've mentioned Laser Time before. They were talking about their 20 favorite games of all time. And they were talking about Snake Eater. I think Snake Eater is like the best Metal Gear.
My favorite, yeah.
But they were talking about, and I haven't played it in a while, but how the story, like the codex messages, you'll go for like 20 minutes. You're just trying to skip through codex. I've never listened to a codex conversation in Metal Gear because I know they take like 12 minutes.
I just can't do it. Which one you're playing. Like the original one where you had that really racist the Chinese lady who was like super racist. Oh, it's the famous Sawage Snake. It's like, oh, this is funny. I'm going to listen to this.
You want to listen to that?
Yeah, that adds to the narrative. It's like, wow, this is really racist.
And there are instances, though, like in the Codex where it's like you're in the story, then all of a sudden you start talking about like Godzilla. I think that happens specifically in Snake Eater.
That's Kojima doing like random bullshit, though. That's just like him trying to get away with stuff.
But it's still like, in a sense, he is building this lore.
Sure.
And he's putting it in the way. Because what I love about Snake Eater is I think it has some of the best gameplay in the Metal Gear Solid series, where it is a nice mix of stealth and action.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's right on the other sides of how the game.
It's in the middle of all of them. Like, 5 is very much about the gameplay. Story's just like, it's there, but it's not center stage.
And so I think that's why that's a good evolution of seeing how that plays out. But yeah, it just. I don't know. I couldn't think of another franchise where that really happens, where just story just has to get up and move. At least something that isn't an RPG. Because I think that happens a lot in RPG, for me.
Yeah,
but you kind of have to hunt out the story.
I mean, that's the thing. It's weird. It's like, does the narrative get... Like, I'm trying to think of, like... Because I love so many RPGs, but I'm always there for the story that I never think gets in the way. You know, I'm just trying to think if there's anything... the Final Fantasy 5, or not 5, excuse me, 15's story. It's just like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I just want to go back to hunting monsters. I don't care about all these other, I don't care about Luna Freya and her British voice and how she's talking, oh, I have to save the king. Oh, I have to resurrect this.
She's not 50.
The sea serpent, and it's going to kill me. Uh-oh. Spoiler, she dies in the game.
You can't do that. No, she doesn't.
Yeah, she does.
No, she doesn't.
Come on, John, she dies.
No, she doesn't.
She dies. She gets... Oh, she dies off screen. I just ruined Final Fantasy XV.
No, she doesn't. She sleeps... She falls asleep next to you at the end.
Oh, does she? Oh, yeah, she does, I guess. Now you spoiled it.
God.
Oh, it doesn't matter. You're not playing the game for the story. You're playing for the gameplay.
I started to play for the story.
Yeah.
I want to end the ludo narrative dissonance topic again.
Please.
But first, I do want to mention one game, and this is kind of specifically out to Birdie, who did not like the Uncharted series again. He mentioned that he has not.
I hope we don't like we're hating on him or anything
No. I'm talking directly to him because he actually brought this up and he inspired this 30-minute conversation about us kind of really digging into it. Because, like you said, this conversation is kind of evolved.
It's evolved.
As we've talked, because there are instances where I'm like, no, it's gameplay. Mm-hmm. It's all about gameplay. Like, Mario's strictly gameplay. I don't give a fuck about Princess Peach. She's like a dick.
Oh, man.
Sorry. That was a little aggressive. And there are other instances where it's all about the story. He mentioned that he has not played Last of Us.
Oh, you should do
and
that.
I think The Last of Us, if you don't like Uncharted, Last of Us really...
It strikes the right balance.
It strikes the perfect balance, in my opinion. Whereas there are instances where I think you might think that your character is becoming too brutal and that he's making careless actions, which after like a next cutscene happens after that scene. I'm specifically talking about the ending with Joel and how he... basically becomes a psychopathic murderer.
Yeah.
Like, officially. It's as you're playing the game, you start realizing that you're killing people that you don't want to kill. But you're in maybe it takes you aback, but it's because at that point, the story wants you to turn against Joel and understand that he is selfish and he is a killer at heart and that he only cares about himself and doesn't really care about Ellie at its core.
Yeah.
And that's when Naughty Dog is using that gameplay, twisting it, using it to help meld the story. And I just think, Birdie, you'd really enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And I would love to, if you do get the chance to play it, to let me know what you think about it. Because I think that's a perfect example.
Absolutely.
Of story v gameplay. But yeah, I did want to go back to the game that kind of started the word ludonarrative dissonance, Bioshock. The original Bioshock. I actually don't agree with that whole argument that the gameplay doesn't match up with the story. I understand that the game at its core is about fighting against being controlled. From my sense, I hear the narrative is Andrew Ryan started this thing because he did not want someone to control him, whether that be government, other people. He wanted things that were his to be his.
Isn't a man entitled to the sweat on his brow?
One of the greatest, one of the greatest little spiels in gaming. It's very early on. But in the gameplay, gameplay at its core is very much about killing and just fighting your way to get to a person. But I think a la Split, where the ending really recontextualizes the entire actions of the game. And I think if you play the game and just like stop at a certain point, it'll seem like the games aren't lining up. The gameplay isn't lining up with the story. But once that flip comes, it becomes the story is about control, and the gameplay is very much about who's controlling what.
Exactly. It's like, all right, am I controlling the character or someone else controlling the character? It doesn't matter. It's all connected.
Yeah. And I think that's actually a really good example of when it's really working. But yeah, I think that's really good.
So. No, absolutely. I think that, like you said, I like the fact that this conversation just took so many different, directions. And it'll continue to evolve, later on, I think, as we play this year.
I think that's why there's so many genres of games, too, because, I don't know, what are the stories in fighting games?
Yeah, there is one.
And for a lot of RPG fans, I don't think turn-based combat is great, but I know some people do, and, like, cover-based shooting isn't for everybody. It's just certain styles of gameplay work for certain styles of people.
Ends up being subjective.
And depending on the day of the week, I want X amount of story or I want Y amount of story. It's just, that's why I love video games, is that there's something for everyone in this weird little rainbow gauge of everything. But yeah.
And no one is wrong for liking one thing over another thing. It just pertains to what you like. Like, I don't like hack and slash, but I like, turn-based combat.
I mean, you are wrong about that. God of War is excellent game.
Yeah, absolutely. Calliope!
Is that a real goddess?
Yeah.
Is that a water one?
Athena. I don't fucking remember. Zeus.
I just remember you get to have sex with the goddess of love, and I was like, that's a really good moment. Because that actually comes to a peak. It comes to a peak because in every God of War game, you have a sex minigame.
Oh, yeah, you do.
So that in the final game, you have sex with the Goddess of Love. And it's like, well, duh.
She break his dick off or something?
I don't know.
I didn't complete God of War 3.
I think he just makes her orgasm because apparently Jesus. Kratos is like the best.
Oh, apparently. That's Spartan rage.
But be sure to let us know what kind of games you think strike that balance. Not the perfect balance necessarily, but what the perfect balance is for you.
Mm-hmm.
What you prefer, gameplay versus story.
Yeah, story.
And I would also love to hear like what games just like do not work for you, a la Birdie with Uncharted. Are there any games that you can think of in particular that just don't work for you?
I mean, like I said, the hack and slash stuff, a lot of the stuff on the PS2 generation. Some of those platformers don't particularly work for me. Jak and Daxter, for instance, you know, those kind of games. Yeah, and one thing I want to bring up, actually I want to ask you is, because eventually we'll get to it, but with Mass Effect, you've been playing through Mass Effect, and you've kind of complained about how the combat or the gameplay is getting in the way of like kind of the narrative. Do you even like the narrative that's going on in Mass Effect? That's the one thing I'm just kind of curious about. Not to spoil our potential review, but do you think that game, I mean, it has an imbalance, obviously, where the focus is not on gameplay, but it has a focus on story.
I think we've talked about it a little bit. I've described my gameplay, like my current walkthrough of the game, and you got mad at me because you said you're playing it wrong,
which is something that maybe we should talk about. But do it now or
no? We'll do it. We'll do it in the review. But okay. It does on a larger scale. It brings up something with RPGs that is again, it's
different from other
games. For me to get into because of my certain focus on narrative is. You describe in Mass Effect how having a certain character on a certain thing, certain missions, dictate how that event can play.
It adds to the narrative.
And so in my sense, what is the narrative? And not knowing what the actual story is really bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, how you said you're playing it wrong. You didn't bring this person on this mission. Mm-hmm. And it just – something about that really frustrates me in like – makes me a little anxious because I'm just like, I'm not playing it how it should be played.
Yeah. Now, I exaggerate with the saying that you're playing it wrong. I was being funny. I was just saying because I never heard anyone doing that before. You know, it was so weird. I couldn't believe it. Let's say, for those of you who've played Mass Effect, John did not get the last squad mate that you need. And he's already like 3/4 of the way through the game about this. I'm like, what? How did you not do that? So it's weird. But the gameplay... in this case, really affects the story, which I think is interesting. You know, I never realized that at the time. It was just like, yeah, it really changes the narrative depending on you doing, not doing certain things with the gameplay.
Which is just, I don't know, for someone like me, it's just very complex. Because I need to know this is the thing.
You need the structure.
Yeah, I need the structure.
Your PS2 generations, you just got to run down a hallway for the entire time to get to an arena. It's just like, RPGs.
You shoot the guys, then the Ansel cracks a wise joke about pooping. Like, that's what I love.
Yes, excellent.
But yeah, like I said, leave a comment. Let us know what happens. Birdie, I need to know your opinions on Last of Us if you play it. But yeah, I guess that's the end of the show. But as always... we want you to listen to Highly Suspect Reviews on the oneofus.net network, as well as what we got Inside the Locker. We've got Deliberations of Doom.
And which is a subscriber horror podcast. We have The Screamcast, which is our regular horror podcast, which you can listen to for free. We also have Somebody Likes It, which is our music podcast. We have Five and Out, which is kind of a variety podcast where they talk about all sorts of topics, video games, movies, television shows. We also have Movie BS, which kind of is another general kind of movie review show. A ton of great stuff. And of course, you know, you can follow We Are Error, not only on One of Us, but also on Twitter at We Are Errorcast. And you can follow me at Chris J. Herman on Twitter.
John, and I'm _ John Romo. That is J-O-N. So no H there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's, I don't know how to close this one out. I'm not going to say something dumb and then you go like, no, but that's the ending. Jonathan can't come up with a good ending. Lunar. Equation.
Oh, God. Great ending. As the moon in Majora's Mask goes.
I'm trying to share.